Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. Happy Father's Day. You're supposed to say that to me.
Happy Father's Day, John.
Thank you very much.
What did you do for Father's Day?
Did you
hear from your daughter?
I did hear from my daughter.
Cool.
We took
Dad out to whale watching today. Had a blast. He felt like he was going to be with his people, but he's like, do you think they'll think I'm one of them?
My daughter posted a picture of me dancing with her on her wedding day, and I don't think I could look more uncoordinated if I was wearing a lampshade on my head, but it's very, very happy memory there. So we're talking about fathers and fathers in recovery, what it means to be a dad. We have the great Tony V, comedian, actor, and father in the studio.
Yay!
I am all three of those, not always at once and not in that order.
And we have Joshua Bennett Johnson, father, writer, and therapist.
Hey, yo.
In the studio as well.
Mom, Dad, thank you.
And we're going to talk about, like I say, Father's Day, fatherhood, fathers in recovery. If you want to give us a call, talk about your memories of your father or what your experience as a father in recovery is, give us a call, 617-266-6868.
Well, on Mother's Day, you wanted to come in and say, so what's so great about mothers? And I was going to say the same thing. But you guys are both fathers. You are too, all three of you. You both have had fathers. Tell me about growing up in a house with a father. How is it, you know, why are dads important?
I don't know that they are. You know what I mean? I figured if I had my mom, I'd be all set. Yeah. You know, my dad was the guy who came home from work and told me not to do stuff. I could have lived without him. You know what I mean? You know, because wait till your father gets home. How many times have you heard that? Oh, I go, what am I waiting for? I didn't do anything. But you always lived in fear, you know, back in the day. But, you know, they teach you, you know, how to be a guy. I mean, that's the best thing you can, you know, hope for if you have a dad in your life, is that you learn from him, either by watching or by him telling you how to be a stand-up guy and how to do the right thing, you mm-hmm. know. And not that women don't do that, but I think at a certain age, it's, you know, guys on guys. Like, I have a 16-year-old son now, and we couldn't be any closer. You know what I mean? Like, right this second, like, he'll, you know, like, I can't wait to get home and watch Game of Thrones with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because someone's head's going to get squashed, and we're the only two who go, like, yeah. You know, my wife would go, oh. And I go, oh, man, he squashed his head like a melon.
Now, do your kids see you as cool? Because my daughter, I would take her backstage at rock concerts and all that, and she would pretend that she wasn't impressed at all. And then years later, her friends would say, no, she thought you were cool. But they would never admit it.
My kids don't think I'm cool.
They don't think you're cool? Yeah, I'm going through a period right now where they think I'm pretty cool because, you know, I don't have a typical job. And, like, last night I did a show at the Schubert Theater. It was, like, this big deal, you know, mm-hmm. the Legends of Boston Comedy or whatever is myself. And,
you're a
and
legend?
Three, but I'm a legend.
In your
you
own
sit,
time.
You sit in front of a legend. This is what I said to the audience, like, you never thought you'd meet a legend. And then, look, this is it. This is what you get. But, no, you know, for lack of whatever it is, it was myself and Lenny Clark and guys who have been around for a while. Wow. It's better legend than saying they're not dead yet. You know what I mean? Instead of going, these guys are still breathing and being funny, they're legends, whatever.
And legends never die.
And they don't. And some people don't even think I exist. I just appear in the mist on a full moon. But I took my daughter to the Schubert. And you know, it was pretty cool for her. There were, I don't know how many people it holds, but there was a lot of them, and they were laughing at me. And you know, she was tweeting and Facebooking backstage.
Hey, that is just, that proves
that's
you're cool.
Really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Although I did say to her at one point, this really blew it. She had posted a picture of me, and I said, hey, can I retweet that on my Facebook? And she went, you are so dumb. Uh-huh. You shouldn't. Dad. Anybody who says that shouldn't. Give me your phone. Give me that phone. You know?
See, I had such a different experience growing up because I was a child of divorce and split time between my mom and my dad, and really was raised by my mom and my older sister. So I didn't have that male role model. So to learn how to be a man was done differently. And I'm not even really sure if I've gotten there yet.
But, hey, you got time. How old are you?
12.
Well, you know, older than I look, probably.
But in your 30s, right?
Yes.
You got all kinds of time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a young child at home,
2
Josh.
Years old.
What's that like?
2 years old. It's a whirlwind. It's crazy. And she's an intense little girl.
Yes, she is.
Yes,
I am very fortunate to have a very patient wife and loving, supporting family, too. But, you know, to kind of piggyback what Tony was saying, anyone can be a dad. Any guy who just like wandered in the room that night can be a father. The mother's role is like much more defined. So if anything, I've learned that it's a lot of hard work to, you know, show up every day for that child and to try to be a good teacher and to try to raise her, you know, into a somewhat substantial adult.
Yeah. The fact that they make it to adulthood still fills me with wonder.
Sure.
That's right. Despite your best
effort. We're all living on borrowed time here, John. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way. And, you know, I mean, also going along with that, it's a, you know, the traditional being a man thing doesn't even hold water anymore because, you know, as we found out and you learn stuff, is the being a guy is who you are. Mm-hmm. It's not, it doesn't mean, you know, it's not like you got to, you know, be John Wayne or whatever, you know, the model used to be about this is a guy and we, you know, we chew leather and we don't have emotions and we don't do this. It's, you know, it's whoever you grow up to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you deal squarely with people and somebody teaches you how to do that and you know, how to hold your own in an argument, then I think you're doing fine.
Sure.
Well, it's really interesting because we work with a lot of young men where, you know, where we work. And there are a lot of people who are trying to figure out how to be a man. Mm-hmm. Like what, you know, what being a man looks like, you know. They're trying to go kind of by their old, you know, generation before standards. And, you know, and that's not what people want in the world right now.
It's a different world today. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's a completely different world.
It's a huge difference from this generation to the last generation.
But there is that thing, you know, men, piggybacking on that and talking about, you know, what Tony and Josh said about the idea of the John Wayne guy and suck it all up.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so if that's in your head and then all of a sudden you have to be this, in this world now we live in, you have to be this available person who's open-minded and raising kids with a good, you know, moral compass and like that, there's a little, sometimes you feel pulled in a couple of different directions.
Well, and then you go home and watch Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
and someone gets their head squashed like a melon and you couldn't,
like
and you couldn't be
day.
Happier. That's you right. know, right?
My dad never changed a diaper in his life.
No.
No, he was never expected to change
like
a diaper.
Like I said, my dad was, you know, always had 3 or 4 jobs to make ends meet, you know what I mean? So he would come in and, you know, he'd meet out the discipline or, you know, on occasion to take us to a movie on a weekend, but that was it. And it was mostly my mom. You know, we grew up working class in Somerville and, you know, everybody was pulling their own. And, it much different. My kids have a much different experience because I barely have a job. you know what I mean? I was with my kids as much or more than my wife. I had duty during the day a lot of the time because I work at night.
I'm hearing you're available.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't have had it any differently. And if you told me that, you know, growing up in a pretty traditional, you know, Italian household, that that's how I was going to end up, wouldn't have believed you. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't have changed a thing.
It's a good gig, though, that you get to do that.
Oh, it's sweet.
And we're seeing the non-traditional stuff. You know, most mothers work.
Yeah.
And so the burden, you know, I know with you, Josh, and Abby, the burden goes back and forth with the family, whoever's
like,
around.
Yeah, you have Thursday. You have a bunch of days. You're off because that's your dad day.
Absolutely. That's my daddy day.
And that's just wonderful. Yeah. That's so wonderful.
It is.
Yeah, truthfully, I wish I had more. I wish I had more daddy days. The good thing about being a dad, especially at this age with a 2-year-old, is I am the playmate. I am like the eternal
oh, yeah.
So that's all we do.
Hey,
we go
Dad's
outside,
home, let's go
and
play.
We go to playgrounds, and we go on the swings, and we run around, and we roughhouse. And I love it. I get to sort of relive my childhood again.
Well, I remember watching out the window one day when my husband and my daughter were out, and he was swinging her so high. And I would have never tolerated that, but it was like, that's exactly what you
do. I used to try to swing him. I used to try to get him over. I actually tried to see if I could swing him around. And my wife saw it one time and went, are you out of your mind? I go, no, we're fine.
I mean,
everything's
it looks,
cool.
It looks like it would be fun.
Yeah, I'd like to do it if I could.
Absolutely.
Well, the great thing to be able to do is when you get to spend more time with both parents, you can split them further because you can
That's
say,
right. you know, Dad said.
Yeah, Dad said this. Mom, you said this.
Mm. Dad's a better swing to better on the swing.
Dad said that I shouldn't tell you, but that happened recently with some boys and myself. We're talking about being a father. We're talking about being fathers in recovery. When we come back, we're going to talk about how recovery interfaces with fatherhood and being a parent. You're listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be back right after the break. Welcome back to Right Turn Radio. I'm John Cohan, here with Abby Dean.
And Tony V and Joshua Bennett Johnson.
That is absolutely right. We're talking about fatherhood, being a father in recovery. Tony, you were on Louie this week, great show.
I think when we shot it, I think it was a couple episodes. It was going to be a two-episode arc, what they say, but they stuck them together and ran it like an hour and a half, like one episode, and I think it did it justice. It was pretty good.
It was a great show. If anybody didn't see it, the premise was Louis is out at a park in Brooklyn, and he sees his young 13-year-old daughter smoking pot, and he goes and grabs her, and as he starts talking to her, it kind of goes into a flashback about when he was 13.
Right, and how he got a break. He got caught doing something pretty devious when he was smoking pot, and then the school and as everybody sort of rallies around him for it. It's really weird the way it was written is you know none of us I guess the joke in acting is what's my motivation, you know what I mean? And nobody, and he kept it very sort of amorphous, very sort of like however you feel like playing this. Wow. You know what I mean? However you feel like the reason you want to, you know, let the kid off the hook, that's the reason for doing it. There's no other thing. Hmm. You know, it's like there's one scene in the bathroom when they blow off a quarter stick of dynamite, and I play the principal on the show, and I come running in, and I see it's like this troubled kid, and he goes, "You just let him go. You just don't want to deal with him."
Yeah.
And that was the direction, and you know, it was left up to us to decide. You know, was I afraid of him? Was I not afraid of him? Was I just sick of him? Was it, you know, did he have something on me? Whatever it was, and it played out really well, you know.
It was great.
And it, you know, and he doesn't hit you over the head with the moralizing of it.
That's right.
He just, you know, as he's trying to deal with his kid, he remembers what it was like to be a kid. And I think that, you know, that spoke very loudly through those episodes.
So speaking of which, have you had that conversation with your kids about drugs?
I mean, I've always, you know, I know I've said this on this show before, too, is I've always not babied my children about, you know, anything. And I've always talked to them, not like they're adults, but with language they could understand, but not like, well, it's not bad. You know, I'd go like, look, drugs will get you in a pickle. You know what I mean? It may even seem like fun for a little bit, you know, but eventually it's going to end in a bad way. And, you know, my kids all know that I will always get them out of, you know, I will always bail them out if they're in a situation that they're not comfortable with, or if they get in too deep, I will always rescue them. My kids also know I can't be embarrassed. You know what I mean? That's the beauty of being me.
But you can embarrass.
I can embarrass them, and I told them I will.
It's a
one-way
street.
Yeah, and they know for a fact I will.
Yeah.
There's nothing I wouldn't do. You know what I mean? So you know, I have that going for me.
Did your dad ever have that talk with you?
No, my parents never had that. I don't even know what sex is like.
Still.
You know what I mean? Nobody ever took. We never talked about anything in my, you know. They left it to the nuns, and now. You know how that goes. You know, I remember, you know, our talk about drugs and this is funny how Catholics work. You know, it was all guilt.
Yeah.
Drugs and sex was all about guilt. You know what I mean? You don't want to touch
her. If you're doing
it right. You have a sister, right? You wouldn't want to touch anybody touching her like that. What are you drugging her into this? I got nothing, Father. You know what I mean? Plus, I'm getting advice from a priest. All right. I get it. All right. You know. But you know, my folks left it all to somebody else. They wanted nothing to do with drugs or and I think it was foreign to them. You know, I'm older. You know, I'm 60. So, you know, I was in the 60s, and it was a whole different world. It was a whole different ball game. You know, they were Manhattan martini, you know, drinkers on the weekend, and then all of a sudden this counterculture hit, and you know, I had older brothers who had sort of missed it and were like folkies, and then the rock and roll thing hit, and I got sucked in completely. And they were just in denial. They were just, you know, I guess if we don't pay attention to it, it'll go away.
Josh, now you're going to have this talk with Mari at some
point. Oh, I mean, we talk about it all the time, Shanna. Sex
and
drugs.
She asks questions a lot.
She's just in the room. I'm always talking about sex and drugs.
So, but they're going to ask questions.
It's important for a two-year-old.
Absolutely.
Yes. Sure.
Well, it's a different world.
It's a tough
world,
Mari.
Yeah.
They grow up quickly.
That's right. I think about it a lot, though. I really do. Because I remember some of the talks that my mother primarily had with me about drugs. And she, you know, she was in the 60s. Living in San Francisco and, you know, protesting.
Yeah,
taking LSD and smoking pot. And she told me pretty straight up that she was, you know, that was her life at that time. She was also able to put it down at that time. So, but I'll tell you, in the way that she described it to me, it kind of looked attractive. It kind of looked attractive
to me. Yeah,
sure,
I can see that.
At 12 or 13 years old because, you know, learning about the 60s when you didn't live during the 60s, it just seems like such an incredible time.
It seems like a cool place, right?
And I love the music. I love the music from that era. So, you know, some of those early talks, if Mom did it, you know, maybe I should try it too. It kind of, it made me feel like I had permission.
Well, here's what she's going to ask, because I had this question. You know, we had all these conversations. Mom, if it's so bad for you, why do people do it?
Because it feels good.
And you have to explain that.
That's
part.
Right. That's right.
And that's a hard thing to explain.
Right, but that, you know, that's
it
what
goes
I was.
Away.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. That you know, it's gonna feel good for a while.
Yep.
You know, but it never ends.
Never
well.
Ends.
Never
well.
Ends well. Never well. And I'm not a big fan of, you know. I leave me out of it completely. Well, did you ever do it? You know, that has nothing to do with it. What I did and didn't do is in the past. We're dealing with you now in the present, and it's a much different place than where I was.
Yes.
We know a lot more.
Yeah,
we understand a lot more. You know what I mean? Before, we were just sort of, you know, groping in the dark and figuring, well, this is okay. We'll try this, free that, whatever. But, you know, as you learn, you know, this is the thing I don't get about the world. No one wants to learn from their mistakes. You know what I mean? Everybody, you know, when I was a kid, they would beat us from here to, and then we did the right thing because they hit us. And I go, well, yeah, but we found out that
doesn't work.
That's right.
It doesn't work.
That's
we don't. Why?
Right
why
thing.
Do we want to keep repeating that ridiculousness when we've learned something?
That's right.
Well, Tony, God forbid, but what if you came across, you know, like in the Louis show, what if you came across one of your kids smoking weed? What would you do?
I know what I would do. I would sit them down once they were straight, and you know, you don't want to talk
moment.
To anybody
no.
when they're high.
No.
You
know, yeah, just, whatever.
Right, whatever. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Yeah.
Dim the lights. Right. Put on the Allman Brothers.
Right. Make up some brownies.
Sure.
Kick back. No, you know, and tell them that, you know, that what I said earlier. It's not going to end well. Whatever you think it is now, you know, it's not, it won't end well because it takes over. I think the problem with drugs and alcohol is when it does take over your life. And that's what we've learned that happens. That even, you know, in recovery, people who have slips, it's like, well, I could have one or two. Yeah, you can maybe for
slippery
a month.
Slope, yeah.
Yeah, maybe for a month or
but
two.
Then.
But then eventually you're right back to, you know, I don't have to go to work today.
I'll tell you,
I don't need.
The more we learn about addiction, too, it's a talk that's going to need to happen with my daughter when she comes of age. It's like, hey, there's a genetic component to this. You might be carrying this gene where, you know, you pick something up like a drink or a drug and you might not be able to stop or you might need help to stop.
That's a great point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think people do trade in their addiction sometimes. You know what I mean? They go, drinking's my problem, so I'll smoke pot and that'll be fine. And you know, well, okay, I can't handle that. I'll do something else.
That's
you keep looking for the thing that you can get away with. And if you're an addict, I don't think you can get away with anything.
No,
because you'll become addicted to it.
The next thing will take over.
Well, when you're 14 years old, you think you're immortal. So
you don't know. You haven't seen it. Yeah. Right.
And some of the misconceptions the kids have about this stuff is interesting. Yesterday, I had a conversation with a 6-year-old who thought that smoking made you bald because he knew a couple bald people who smoked.
And you said, yes, it
and
does.
I said, it does. It makes you bald.
Of course it does.
By the time you're 17.
We're talking about fatherhood. We're talking about dads. We're talking about recovery.
Listen, I get up every morning with my children and make them a hot breakfast.
Really?
Every morning.
Don't tell my kids.
And drive them to school so they can sleep an extra 40 minutes because I think it's important. And I can come back and growl between the sheets for another couple hours. So it's not like I'm being a martyr here, but I really think it's important, you know, to do that. And then, you know, one day my son comes up and he goes, hey, you know, Dad, these eggs aren't that good. And I said, you know how many times my dad made me breakfast? Exactly none. That's how many times my dad make me breakfast. So eat the eggs or get a bowl of cereal and shut up.
don't follow in his footsteps.
That's beautiful Father's Day wish.
I'm telling you. But you got to treat them that way because, you know, we were laughing why I said it, but they got it. You know, they got it. But I go, come on, man. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm making you eggs.
You got eggs.
Eggs. I said, go ask. When you get to school, ask any of your friends how many dads got up, made them eggs, and then drove them to school. I just want you to ask those questions.
Or even moms.
Anybody. Exactly. Right. And kids are standing at the bus stop at 6:30. My kids are still warm in bed. And I'm getting grief over eggs? Not today.
Well, it reminds me, my dad, you know, when my dad came home, dinner had to be on the table. That was the thing. Like, my dad got home at 6 o'clock, that dinner was on the table. Right. Nowadays, I sound old, but there was expectations. And now with, you know, if you're working two jobs, you have a wife that's working, the kids, you know, they'll come to dinner. Hey, cook me breakfast.
Right.
Make me some breakfast. Is there anything that you guys have learned from recovery that's helped you being a parent?
When I think of recovery, I think of the best advice somebody ever gave me, which was try not to hurt anyone else. Understand that you're going to hurt people, you know, because you're imperfect, you're human, and try not to do it again. So the way I understand recovery, it's so much more about just abstaining from a drink or a drug. It's about being a better person. It's about being a kinder person. And, you know, 90% of it for me is showing up. It really is. It's showing up for the kid and it's showing up for the family. Much in the same way that, you know, if you show up to recovery, you're going to absorb stuff. You're going to learn stuff. But parenting is a whole other trip, man. It's a head trip. And truthfully, it's nothing like recovery. It's much more chaotic. It reminds me of the days I was using. You bet.
Yeah. I think the thing I've learned is patience and clear thinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That help a lot. Because there's a lot of times when being a parent, being a dad, you have to take that moment to think clearly and not just react. And sometimes, you know, you're tired or you had a bad day or you got some bad news or whatever and you snap and you try to, you know, you try to pull back from that. But, you know, I'm, you know, 98% of the time it's like, all right, my knee-jerk reaction is to do this, take a minute, breathe, relax, and then answer. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's, and I think if you know, you're not in recovery or if you're in an altered state, it's hard to do. You know what I mean? That's, you know, I get into this with people all the time. Or, you know, someone gets caught for, like, drinking and driving or drugging and driving. People go, well, how can they do that? You know, why would they do that? And I go, well, because when you're not drunk, you're not thinking you're going to do it. But when you are drunk, you go, like, ah, I'm fine. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm fine.
What's the worst that could happen?
What's the worst? Right. I can handle this. But nobody in their clear head goes, oh, I'm going to get loaded and drive as fast as I can down the highway the wrong way. Hey. You know, people get loaded and they go, nope, we're good. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, that's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So how do you balance, you know, recovery with the incredible demands of being a dad?
It's, I know in my household, it's not balanced. It's not.
Is it ever?
I picture it like two horses racing, you know, and they're sort of like trading off the lead with one another, neck and neck. And it's, a lot of it's just like sort of take it as it comes and act as if. But I also know that I wouldn't be a dad today without my recovery. And as long as I keep that up front, it makes the experience much more valuable, much more rewarding to me.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the keeping busy part too. That, I mean, you know, I mean, for lack of a better thing, you get addicted to your kids.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that becomes where you put your emotional and physical, you know, strength into, is like, all right, as long as I'm working for the kids and doing this for the kids and blah, 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 then I'll be fine. And you, then, you know, you find you're at the end of the day, and it's, oh, good, I go to bed, I'll be fine, and we'll start up again tomorrow.
Something I love about recovery, too, is my perspective is really, it's powerful when it comes to the important things in life, like the little things. So when you go through active addiction or alcoholism and you see the dark side of things, when you get out of that,
right,
you see much more beauty and you see much more, I don't know, those little moments that I cherish today and the little things that make up the big picture. I didn't used to see them like that. I took a lot of that for granted when I was still actively drinking.
And you can see that. And you can relish the tiny things. Like I'm like a big kid like that. Like, I get emotional over a cup. You know what I mean? It's like my kid thought for Father's Day, they got me we're crazy into the Game of Thrones, I'm sorry. But my son brought me a Game of Thrones T-shirt, and it was the House of Stark, which is the most noble house.
Oh, of course.
You know what I mean? And I go, that is so great that you think I would be a Stark. Yeah. And he goes, relax, it's the only one that would fit you.
Yeah, it was the last one left on the rack.
It was the only double XL they had, so you're a House of Stark. I think you'd be a Baratheon. And I go, oh, now you got to ruin a perfect moment.
That's right.
Now you're killing me. You know?
Well, smash his head.
Yeah. Well, if I had a claw hammer, he would have had it.
Well, part of that, too, is like, you know, being in recovery, you get to experience other men going through the stuff you go through. And you hear people with the experience of raising children. We know a couple people that were single dads that raised their children in recovery. And you start hearing about accountability and you start hearing about the stuff, you know, or for me, part of it was just kind of rebuilding the relationship I had with my daughter.
I love that. For somebody like me who grew up with dad on the periphery, you know, he wasn't the dad that I saw every day. And maybe some of those lessons that he could have passed on if he were in the house and still in the marriage. You know, who knows what it would have been like. But a lot of my male role models are men in recovery.
Yeah.
I've found most of, you know, these my mentors, my sponsors, just people who I admire, and they're people who I can go to ask questions about parenting or about anything, really.
And this is, you know, it's, we always talk in our field, Abby, about modeling good behavior, and you know, I know other fathers who are in recovery whose kids are going through addiction issues, and today I got to witness somebody coming back. And, you know, saying that his stepfather was the one that gave him the example that you can stop doing this and come into recovery is really touching.
Well, the other thing is, life is always unmanageable. Mm. And once you realize that and you just realize, you know, I mean, your addiction's unmanageable. Families are unmanageable. And, you know, you just kind of come to terms with that. It's like,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, everything we do is on the fly.
Yeah.
Everything we do. Anything we had planned goes right out the window. Because the two-year-old demands it. I mean, she keeps us on our toes.
But so does the 16-year-old.
Oh, and the 14-year-old.
Oh,
yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, the hair and the. I mean, but But at every stage, it gets different. The problems get different. The issues get different. But they're still the same kids, and you know, and you still try to keep the same, you know, the same temperament with them. Mm-hmm. And as I said, you know, my kids, I've always, you know, tried to keep an open dialogue, and you know, and I can say to them, like, look, you're being a nitwit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they know it doesn't mean that I don't love them.
Right.
I just don't like that behavior at the time. And, you know, it's the same when they have some successes. Someone will go, oh, you must be very proud of your son. I go, look, I'm always proud of him. I'm happy for him for this.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? So it's you gotta respect their lives.
That's nice.
It's not my life. Yeah. It's theirs. And you're trying to point them in the right direction. My race is run.
We've got I'm done.
I quit. I'm at it.
He came in seventh.
We've got Tony V. We've got Joshua Bennett Johnson. We're talking about fatherhood. A riot's done broken out in the studio. We'll be back right after this break. You're listening to Right Turn Radio.
Tony, at the break, you were talking about, I'm done. They've got to live their own life. But we run into problems, a lot of people not kind of figuring that out. Mm. How did you figure it out that they can start figuring this out for themselves?
Well, I think I said it earlier. You learn from mistakes. You know, my folks never let us go. You know what I mean? When we were kids, I came from, as I mentioned, a very traditional Italian household. And you weren't supposed to leave the house till you get married,
and maybe not then,
and not even then, right? I mean, we live in multi generational houses. You know, yeah. I lived in a three decker, and you know, I had an uncle and cousins up on top, and we lived in the bottom. My grandmother lived, you know, four doors down, and uncle lived around the corner. You know, and that's how you thought it was, because I think there was safety in numbers back then. But you know, as the world grows, you know, you want your kids to be autonomous. You want them to learn for themselves, because you know, there's going to come a day. Not for a long while, that they're going to have to, you know, be on their own.
Yeah. Right, but...
You know? But it's hard.
What's that Chinese proverb? It's the art of parenting is learning to let go.
Let go, yeah.
But I'll tell you what.
I don't like it.
Actually, I think I might have gleaned that from you, Abby. But I'll tell you.
That Abby proverb.
That unconditional love that I feel for my little one, I wish I could do anything and everything to not allow her to feel pain for the rest of her life. But,
right.
You know, truthfully, I mean, I know that's delusional. I know it's not a possibility. But it messes with my head sometimes.
And suppose some guy offers, you know, wants to get high with her.
Yeah.
You would want to murder her.
Well, I'll kill the teen and kill myself.
Yeah, that's right.
Well,
end it there.
Now, never kill yourself. Always kill the other.
Yeah.
Guy.
Sure, yeah. I just kill everyone.
Yeah, kill.
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones. Yeah. That's kill why her. I like it so much.
Squash your right. head. But it's counterintuitive
right.
to tell a parent you need to step back now. They need to
How
have their own.
How often do you say that a week?
10 times
okay,
a week.
It is now time to step back. And let this kid figure it out for themselves.
That's how you learn.
As a counselor, every client I've ever had has an over-involved parent.
Always.
I mean, it seems that way, at least the majority of them.
Right.
But I get it.
And they're doing it out of the kindness.
Out of love.
Because
they're
doing
it out of
protect
love.
It's, what, it's because that attitude you were talking about wanting to keep them safe forever, to be able to fix every situation for them, is, I think, a hard thing to get over, that you can't.
You can't protect people
from
the world.
No, you can't.
So, you know, I have a little one, but I feel like a lot of that is trying to remember what it was like, you know, to be a teen or to be a young person and to, you know, have autonomy.
Right.
So what advice do you have for parents who are trying to talk to their kids? Do you wish you heard or did you hear that was helpful? stuff like that.
Well, don't get pregnant again. That would be my first nugget of
wisdom. That's good. That's a good lesson.
Not bad. Yeah.
Even more than drugs. That's really right. Addicting.
Abstinence is 100% effective.
Sure.
Yeah. God, I don't know if I'd have advice. I really love it when I see an adult being able to meet a kid on their level and not just be this serious adult who's interested in like politics, but to be able to sort of relive what it's like to be a kid and to see the world the way a kid sees it. Not an easy thing to do, but I think it's possible. I think it's possible at least to, you know, to meet them on a more realistic level, because kids don't think like we do.
No,
they just don't. They're not interested in the same stuff. They're not us.
Nor should they be.
Right.
No. You know what I mean? You got to give them the space to be, you know, who they are and what they think. And they are not little grown-ups.
Yeah.
No.
You know what I mean? They are children. Yep. And, you know, part of what you can do is guide them and give them advice and then let them figure it out, you know, for themselves.
Yeah. But there's that time when they really need to step away from you. I remember my daughter would be, you know, we'd walk down the street, hold hands, or she'd walk next to me, and around 11 or 12, I either had to walk 10 paces behind or 10 paces in front of her.
Can you hide behind that tree,
friends.
Mom?
Yeah. But that's what you need to become independent.
That's right.
You know, that's that sure. step away, you know.
And at 16, you know, my son cares more about what his friends think than what I do, honestly. And I know that's the way it's got to be, that's how they figure it out, that,
right.
You know, my son once said to me, Daddy knows what he's doing, he's 18. You know, and I go, I got no comeback for that. I mean, if you think that's good, then I have no, you know, I have no logical answer for that, because you think an 18-year-old's a grown-up.
Yeah, talk about delusional.
When
you're 16. Right.
Genius.
Are you kidding me?
Dad, you haven't met him.
He drives. That's better. Good. He's surrounded by metal. That's what I need. Yeah, sure. But that's what they think. You know what I mean? They, you know, and I have this talk with my wife all the time is, you know, she's going, well, he wants to take the train here by himself and do this by himself. And I go, look, in a year and a half, he's going to college. It's not going to be a different person.
That's right.
Well, you know, we're not just going to one day go, you know, we're done with you. See you later. You know, this is how you learn. You know.
What I grapple with is sort of knowing and having the wisdom of an adult and knowing the ways of the world and withholding that from them so they can learn that on their own.
Right. I think the most important thing is for them to know that they have a safety net.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I said before, you're at a party, people are acting like knuckleheads, mm-hmm. you feel afraid or you don't want to, you know, blame me.
That's right.
My dad, you know, my dad's an idiot.
Yeah.
He's got to come and get me. Or you know, text me, nobody knows, and you just, you know, extricate yourself and know that I trust you to make the right decision because we taught you right.
I love that.
Right.
Yeah.
Borrow your, you know, blame me.
Blame me.
I'll be the bad guy.
Yeah, like I said, I don't care what your nitwit friends think of me. You do. I don't.
But they're 18.
But they're 18. Right?
But they're 18. Jesus. They know everything.
But he plays a guitar. You don't get it. You don't get it.
He's in a
band.
He
smokes. He's cool. Hey, listen.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you so much, you guys.
That was awesome.
Tony V.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
And Joshua Bennett Johnson. Yeah. Thanks so much. Tony, you got any gigs coming up?
I just came on. I had the Louis thing. I did the Legends of Boston last night, which was the big thing. So now it's calmed down for the summer. I got a golf tournament tomorrow at the International for some disease I don't know the name of, but we're going to fix that one. And then I got my summer duty coming up. I'll be at yacht clubs and whatnot.
That's right. So Camp Tony.
Camp Tony.
Grilling.
Yeah. A lot of grilling.
And personally, I have work at 9.
See you
then. Diaper changing.
You can find me there.
So thanks for being here, Abby. It was a great show. You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.